This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Genetically modified organism, or GMO, is a common term for genetically engineered foods. And they first showed up in the U.S. market in 1994 and now make up a large part of the most common commodity crops, such as soybeans and feed corn. There are lots of questions surrounding GMOs. Are they safe to eat? What are the benefits to farmers and consumers? The Boone County Cooperative Extension Enrichment Center is hosting a science-based discussion tonight on all aspects of genetically engineered crops. University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service Specialist Paul Vincelli will be speaking at the event, and he joins us this afternoon to talk about the benefits of and the concerns surrounding GMOs. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, good afternoon, Mark. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know you wanted to make it clear from the start, and I'd like to give you the chance to do that, that you have no conflicts of interest when it comes to discussing this particular topic.
Yeah, I think that's really important to point out. I'm not particularly concerned about colleagues who have funding that relates to genetic engineering, but I actually have never received any funding or any material benefit to talk about genetic engineering. So I'm kind of an outsider to this field, and work very hard to make sure I understand the biology and the issues at stake. But I've actually never received any funding or material benefit for this topic, so I have no conflicts of interest.
So, tell us, what exactly is a GMO?
Sure. So GMO stands for, as you pointed out, genetically modified organism, and that's a phrase and an acronym that people recognize. Most scientists, you refer not to GMOs, but to genetically engineered organisms. I think they mean the same thing. When the public says GMO, they're really thinking about genetic engineering. Because the reason most scientists sort of shy away from the term GMO is all organisms are modified in some way, and maybe in ways that are good for the benefit of humans or not. But I would like to say genetic engineering, to understand it, it's rather simple. Your listeners all understand the concept of copying a sentence from a computer file and pasting it into another computer file. And that's pretty much the idea with genetic engineering. You identify a DNA sequence that you expect to have some particular benefit, and you copy that and you paste it into another organism, in this case plants we're talking about, and see if it does what you expect it to do and if it has the benefit you had hoped for. So it's really a rather fundamentally simple concept to understand.
Why were genetically altered or engineered organisms, why were they developed in the first place? What was the thinking behind this?
Well, so the first trait that was ever marketed was the flavor saver tomato, and that was engineered to hold. It was a very firm tomato, so it would hold up to shipping, which consumers appreciate. But it was supposed to hold its flavor because of the particular genetic changes that they made. So it would ship, but then you would be able to buy it in the supermarket, and it would taste good. The problem with that particular trait is they happened to use a variety that didn't taste particularly good, so there was no flavor to save. Then in the mid-1990s, Monsanto engineered some of the large crops, as you've described, the corn and soybeans, cotton, these large-scale crops, to do a couple of things. One is resist their herbicide, their weed killer. And the other was to resist certain caterpillar insects, and these traits, there's pros and cons, but they were very popular with farmers, and in not only in the United States but worldwide, and so they've become quite common throughout the United States and other countries where these traits are used.
So, what are some of the other genetically engineered crops in the U.S.?
Sure. Well, so actually, most of what we grow that's genetically engineered has one of two traits, or maybe both together in some cases. One is tolerance to the Roundup herbicide or other herbicides, and so you can engineer corn plants to, instead of wilting and dying from the application of a weed killer, you know, they're the only thing left standing, and all the weeds get killed. And so this was very popular with growers. Because it made farming simple, less expensive. It actually, Roundup herbicide, although there are critiques of it, it was and still is considered to be safer for the environment than some of the alternatives that growers were using back in the mid-1990s. So you know, the Roundup Ready crops, they're called, that are tolerant to Roundup herbicide, those, they have a bit of a checkered you know, sort of perception in, among the public, but there are benefits to the technologies, and growers will certainly tell you this. The other trait that where that it's sort of been more clearly beneficial and is the insertion of a gene from a bacterium into plants that causes certain caterpillars to die when it feeds on the plant. Now the gene that is inserted is actually creates a protein that organic farmers use. So it's not particularly dangerous protein to humans, but it's very dangerous to certain caterpillars. And so let's take the case of corn. What happened when corn growers could buy seed with this so-called BT trait, which the BT stands for the name of the bacterium Bacillus thuringiensis, and that BT trait confers resistance to certain caterpillar insects. So what happened? Well, growers found they could stop using certain insecticides. And so we know that and the use of insecticides has dropped dramatically in corn in the United States. And everywhere the BT traits have been used throughout the world, and including in developing countries, they have led to the reductions of pesticide use. So I like to point out that, you know, the BT trait is a good example of how genetic engineering can clearly result in benefit to people in the environment. There are pros and cons. Everything has to be looked at in for its own particular strengths and weaknesses. But most people don't know that, in fact, the BT trait was really quite a success story. Now, one of the things that might be useful is to sort of counterbalance that. You know, some people would say, well, so the BT trait reduced insecticide use, but insects become resistant to the BT trait if you use it over and over and over and over enough times. Eventually, insects adapt, and that's certainly true. So that's one of the weaknesses of the BT trait. But the reality is that that any genetics for pest control, whether these be conventional genes or genetically engineered genes, any genetics, you have a finite lifespan. Insects and infectious diseases always adapt to any genetics we use. So we have to be smart about how we use the genetics, whether they're genetically engineered genetics or conventional genetics. But we know we can reduce pesticide use through the use of genetics, conventional and genetic engineering. And so that's one of the things I find most important about genetic engineering is the opportunities that it provides for reductions in pesticide use.
So Paul, can a crop that's genetically modified, can it still be considered as grown organic?
No, not according. I don't think there's a single country in the world that allows the use of genetic engineering for their organic certification program. I've talked to organic growers who wish there were exceptions to that rule, but for their own particular reasons, organic certification programs have uniformly chosen not to allow at least the current manifestations of genetic engineering in organic certification programs.
If you'd like to join our conversation with University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service Specialist Paul Vincelli, the number to call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. And of course, the big question surrounding these, what do we know about the safety? Are these are genetically modified organisms, are they safe to consume?
Sure. It's a great question. We always get it, and rightfully so. It's something everybody, cares about. Is this safe to feed to my family? And I want to assure you and your listeners that we scientists, and certainly in the public realm, and I think we could say even in the private realm, we all care about food safety as well. And many of us have worked in one way or another on food safety aspects of our profession, whether it be GMOs or not. This is something we care very much about. So I think the simplest way to respond to your question is, you know, that I really have no concern about my family eating genetically engineered crops. I've studied the science. I continue to study it. I'm never a finished product. But, you know, I've worked hard for years to make sure I know, you know, what the experts are saying in this field and where the evidence is in support of what they're saying. And, you know, there's just hundreds of studies that have been done. No one has ever proposed in the scientific world a validated mechanism as to why genetic engineering would be harmful. It seems like it would be. It seems maybe a little creepy, you know, I think. Biologists like me, we're not so creeped out by it. We're actually fascinated and like to understand how to use natural genetics in ways that help us meet the needs of our society and reduce the impact of food production on our planet. But there's been so many studies and not a single, as I say, validated mechanism as to how genetic engineering would cause a risk. It's like, let's go back to the analogy I drew early in the program, and that is if you copy a sentence out of a file, a computer file, and paste it into another computer file, well, that doesn't create a hazard. Now, maybe the recipient book reads better, or maybe it reads worse. But that's just the same with genetics. Maybe the genetic change is good for the plant or good for us consumers, or maybe it's harmful. But it isn't the mere act of transmitting the genetics that matters. It's what the gene does. And that's what matters is what the new genetics do. And that's true. It's always been true for thousands of years. And it's true of conventional genetics as well as genetic engineering. What matters is what the gene does, not the way that you've made the genetic change.
Have GMOs been around long enough to have a track record? Do we really know much about the long-term effects?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's a really good question. Again, it sort of comes back to the food safety thing. There have been something close to 30 studies that I know of that are long-term studies with laboratory animals. So there have been quite a few, including multi-generational studies. So what happens, you know, if the mother, you know, animal eats genetically engineered corn, and then, you know, what happens through multiple generations to those, those pups, for example. That's one source of guidance on this. Another is the most recent review by the National Academy of Sciences evaluated about 20 years, more 21 years of more than that, actually, of consuming genetically engineered crops in the United States. And they compared the incidence of chronic diseases, the National Academy of Science study did, chronic diseases of all sorts between the United States over that time period and the United Kingdom, which would be a suitable control because culturally they're very similar in the United Kingdom to the United States, but they haven't allowed genetic engineering in their crops, whereas we have. And there's not, I don't believe there's a single chronic disease where they found any difference in the trend line over the last 20, 22 years. I come back to this point, you know, it took me a couple years to realize this, two and a half years of study. And I said, wait a minute, it isn't just looking for the next study that might, raise concerns. There is no mechanism for how transferring genetics through, a genetic engineering technique would create a novel risk. There are crazy things that happen with genetics in non-engineered plants. I mean, it's remarkable the kinds of crazy things you see happening on that are totally natural. as a result of conventional breeding or even by nature herself. And I think that was what got me most interested in this topic when I started reading scientific papers showing that organisms have traded DNA. I mean, we have bacterial DNA in our genes, you and I, as humans. And when I started reading things like that, and most of these are recent studies, I was like, wow, this is unbelievable that what we're doing in the lab is actually rather tame compared to what has happened over evolutionary history.
And Paul, we're getting close to running out of time here. I want to get a couple calls in. Let's talk to Jean. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Hi. I have listened to a number of shows on NPR and elsewhere about GMOs, and still I'm left with a question. What is it about GMOs that make them so darn controversial? They have engendered so much inflammation, so much animosity, so much controversy, and even in listening to this show, I still don't quite get
what the fuss is about. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
By way of my background, I'm a physician, I'm educated, I know a lot about genetics, and I still don't quite get why they've come under fire so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great question, and I think that there are going to be dissertations written about this, regardless of whether we're using genetic engineering in plants in 20 or 30 years or not. Well, as a physician, you undoubtedly know that there are medications and vaccines and insulin, for example, that are derived from genetic engineering. So the public is actually, this is a big part of our life already. We're just talking today about crops, and indeed, genetically engineered crops have generated a lot of controversy. Gene, I'm not sure I know all the answers. Typically, I tend to not so much focus on that because, you know, I'd like to keep the focus on the science. But one of the things that I will share, because I've heard this from a number of even dear friends and other scientists who've provided outreach on genetic engineering, the very fact that certain large organizations, particularly Monsanto comes to mind, have patented genetics, really has stuck in the craw of a number of people. And for better or worse, whether their reputation is earned or unearned, the patent issue is one of the things that bothers people. And I think just the mere and not all genetic engineering is patented, by the way. Some of the developing nations are using it in ways that would be freely distributed. I think that's one of the things that comes up. There are undoubtedly a number of social factors that play into this, and I'm going to defer to the social scientists and who study these things.
And Paul, what time is the discussion tonight?
Yeah, 6:30 in Boone County. I think
it's the Boone County Cooperative Extension Enrichment Center. Yeah, so 6:30 for that. Thank you very much, Paul. We appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service Specialist Paul Vincelli, and you can find more information about tonight's discussion at wvxu.org.